All right. We have two ladies in studio with us this morning. We're going to be talking about food safety, you know, not just for people at home. We're talking also talking about food safety in some, well, even some local establishments out there. With us today, we have Dottie LeBeau and Linda Hoxie. We're going to be talking to them. First, ladies, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Food safety, very important, with not just for people at home, but when you when you're dining out, you know, you got to be careful. You got to be careful what you're doing on a monthly basis. On a Wednesday, usually on the third Wednesday of the month, I have professional chefs from the east side of Providence that come in here. That we've been doing that for a few years, but it's always important to talk about what we have in our lives every single day. We're going to start off with Dottie. Dottie, let me give me a little bit of background on who you are and what your company does.
I retired from the Rhode Island Department of Health Office of Food Protection. Mm-hmm. I was a state inspector, and I also taught the food safety classes down at the University of Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. So when I decided to retire, it wasn't where I could just stay home and watch television all day. As my husband said, if you think you're watching Jerry Springer all day, lady, you got to get a job. So I decided to open my own business, thinking it was going to start off as a hobby, but right. It blossomed into something much bigger.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, you also do classes all the time, as you said. Are people understanding food safety? I mean, as a consultant out there, I mean, a lot of people may not realize what that does. What were you doing when you were at the Department of Health?
I inspected restaurants, mm-hmm. schools, hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living, any place that had a commercial kitchen.
Right.
Had to be licensed by the Rhode Island Health Department. Mm-hmm. And they also had to have a certified food safety manager, which meant they took a 15-hour class originally and then had to take the national exam. Mm-hmm.
Very important, though. I mean, and hopefully everybody went through those classes. And sometimes you probably would get some people with flying colors, and then, of course, you might have people that needed to did anybody have to take it again, you know, without mentioning any establishments?
Some people aren't good test takers.
Yeah.
They could answer the questions well in class, but when it came to actually taking the written exams, some people just can't take tests.
Yeah. Sounds like students in most of the schools, too. Some are good and some are not. So, and of course, but they're all special people. Linda Hoxie is also with us. Now, Linda, you're also working. You also work with Dottie. A little bit of background on you.
When coming out of college, I was a school teacher,
mm-hmm.
And then raised my family. And then when I decided to get back into the workforce, I actually went to work for a DB Marketing Company where we had 16 convenience stores, but we were full into food. Mm-hmm. And I soon became the food safety director there. And that was my first real introduction into safe food for consumers. During that period of time, I got my ServSafe certificate, which meant I went to the classes and was then eligible to teach it, which I did there. So I considered my teaching career followed me right into convenience stores. In 2000, I went to work for Dave's Marketplace,
sure.
Where eventually I became the food safety director there. We established all our policies and procedures, and again, I was teaching the food safety. And during that period of time, I met Dottie at a few functions that we went to, and we became very friendly. And when I retired a year ago, I decided to go to work for her, mm-hmm. to continue what I'd been doing, teaching. And we help inspect certain places. We help set establishments. We also put into effect HACCP programs, which is what I call the universal language of food safety. It's a program that has been developed over the years and is in the forefront. It's what companies need to do to begin to do processes outside the norm. So that's my relationship with Dottie and 26 years, I guess you could say, of food safety teaching and instruction and inspecting and all that kind of good stuff.
Good mentor?
Very good mentor.
Yeah, I was going to
say.
Excellent,
yeah.
And what I can hear from both of your voices, passion, very much passion into this business, which, I mean, it's safety. Safety is what we're looking at right now. I know, Dottie, that, you know, as I said, you worked for the Department of Health. Did you also work for the Department of Health too, Linda?
No, I worked alongside them and had a great relationship mm-hmm. with them because of the amount of food that we produce at Dave's Marketplace and mm-hmm. their commissary and in the store. So it was important to have a good relationship with them. And I learned a lot from them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just going over, you know, Dave's Marketplace, you know, just, you know, being one of the one of the retail giants in Rhode Island and beyond, always having some great things. I mean, they're not a sponsor with us, but I will say that I've been in some of their stores in the Greenville area, Johnson Greenville, and the one in Cumberland, which you can get just about anything. But it doesn't matter what it is, Dottie. You know, when you're going to an establishment, whatever, if it's a market or a hospital or a school or whatever that that serves food. You've got to be careful. What is one of the first things, if a brand new establishment is just opening up and you've been hired by that that corporation, whatever it is, what's one of the first things that you have to do in there?
Well, first we look at their menu, mm-hmm. and we decide how are we going to set up the kitchen, especially if it's an empty building. Mm-hmm. We have to submit blueprints to the health department. So we'll sit down and we'll do a rough sketch of exactly where we're going to put everything. They get it approved at the health department. In the meantime, they're probably taking my class, mm-hmm. because they have to have a certified food safety manager licensed with the health department before they can open.
Now, it's not just, as you said, not just supermarkets. You also go into many restaurants as well, right?
And many.
Restaurants, you've got a restaurant on almost every single corner everywhere. Do you also go in, and one of the other things is you also go to these smaller places, like these mom-and-pop shops as well, right?
Yes.
And most of the time when you're going into these establishments, whether it be a market or school, schools might be, is schools a lot different, or they're basically all the same when you're looking at it? I mean, you're feeding thousands of kids on a daily basis.
Oh, it doesn't matter. If you're serving food, the kitchens all have to be equipped the same way.
Mm-hmm. And cleanliness is one of the top issues as well, I'm sure, that you've got to look at as well.
People seem to think, though, that if they have a dirty floor, they're going to get sick right away. And granted, there are certain things, floors, walls, and ceilings that come into it, but we're looking at temperatures. We're looking about bare hand contact. Those are the big things that are going to make people sick. Mm-hmm. Temperature abuse, they don't cook it to the right temperature. They don't hot hold it, cold hold it to the right temperature. They don't date mark it, so they don't throw it away on a timely basis. Yeah. All that is so important.
And one thing, when you mentioned that about temperatures, there are certain temperatures, Linda, as you know, for certain types of foods. You can't serve you can't serve certain types of foods at a low temperature, and you can't cook it at a low temperature. And also that is also very important if people are at home cooking, especially nowadays, if they're doing something outdoors as we're getting into the summer grilling things. I think it's important to notice that whatever types of food that you're having, whether it's in a restaurant, at a donut place, or whatever it is, I think everybody needs that. You need to get a sense of a lesson learned, basically.
It's learning all the time. Mm-hmm. And I say that one of the most important tools anybody can have, whether it's in a restaurant or at home, is a food thermometer. Mm-hmm. To make sure. And there are the guidelines are out there everywhere. If you go on the computer, you can just pull up food safety. It'll tell you cook chicken to 165 degrees. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you know 165 degrees? The food thermometer will do that. That's why the importance of our food safety classes that we do. I even know that people who are not even in the industry, just interested in food safety, have taken classes. But it's very beneficial, and that's probably one of the most important things we do out there, I think, for the consumer and for people, is to give them the classes for them, mm-hmm. to attend. It's a 15-hour class, and it's a learning experience that you will never forget. You might not eat for a week, but once you know, but it's really very important. That's why it's so important for Dottie to get out there and take a look at your facility. But then the next thing is to make sure that everyone is educated and knows what they're doing.
Where are these classes held now?
In Rhode Island, we hold them all over the state.
Okay.
Here in Massachusetts, I teach at the Tiverton Rod and Gun Club, because that's right over on off 24. Yep. So all the people from southeastern Mass and Cape Cod, they all know Route 24. Mm-hmm. And it's very convenient and lots of parking. Because my classes tend to get very big.
They get big.
And then up in the northern part of Rhode Island, like Bellingham, Blackstone, in that area, I teach at Savini's Restaurant in Woonsocket.
Sure. Yeah.
So I have classes just for Massachusetts employees, mm-hmm. as well as Rhode Island.
Excellent. We're going to get into a little bit more about this because very, very interesting subject, which you may learn a few things or two on this. Gina's standing by, though. We have a latest update on the traffic once again. Gina.
Well, things have been pretty busy. We've got a lot going on as far as heavy traffic trying to get down into Providence. The earlier delays through Attleboro and 95 North have cleared out. We're also looking a little better on 295 between Route 1 and 95. There's a little pocket of heavy traffic here by 123, but it's not bad. You're back on the brakes, but not until around Walpole Street, and then that'll continue into the 95-93 split. Back up into Milford on 495 North, 95 South, coming out of Pawtucket. We're backed up not quite to the S-curves, almost. 295 South is fine, coming down out of Attleboro into Johnston, but the 610 is full and overflowing. So now, right now, things are on the heavy side on 24 Northbound. Stop and go coming out of Avon, the expressway full and overflowing into Boston. Earlier accidents after Adams Street is clear. Public transportation probably going to be the way to get into Boston right now. Heading out to the Cape, Bourne Bridge is heavy. Route 28, below speed between Mashpee and Hyannis, but really it's not all that bad. And we're even looking better in South Dennis on the Mid-Cape Highway. 138, it's just absolutely... really, you don't want to go there. 138 eastbound. We've been talking about this construction on and off now. We knew it was going to happen. Lane restrictions, one lane in each direction over the Newport Pell Bridge. And you're backed up from Jamestown to the Toll Plaza. Quick break, back on the brakes on the crest. And I do hear some police activity out there on 138 east between the two bridges. So it could have additionally an accident. That's going to cause a nightmare for a while. So in the coming weeks, because, of course, this is a long-term construction zone, in the coming weeks, you want to get down into the Middletown, Newport, Portsmouth area by using Route 24. Now, right now, you could use 114. Mount Hope Bridge is busy, but it's not as bad as it was earlier. But we find that during peak times, the Mount Hope is pretty messy, too. So 24 is going to be the way to go. Looking at the ride here around Rhode Island, as far as accidents go, Rhode Island DOT not reporting any crashes currently. So that's good news. Next report coming up on Gina Brown with your AM 1320 traffic.
All right, Gina, thanks. Once again, we'll have one more update on the traffic. And, of course, Jim Corbin will latest updates on our weather forecast coming up at around 8:40 as well. Coming up to 20 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock here on this Wednesday morning, we have Dottie LeBeau and Linda Hoxie in studio with us this morning. Learning a little bit more about food safety and how people can prepare it the right way on food. As we were talking off the air, there's a lot of things going out there. You also, as I said, you teach classes on a basis as well. How can people, if they want to learn more about this subject, how can people get in touch with you to attend some of these classes?
I do have a website that lists all my classes for Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. So depending on where they want to take their class, all over the state of Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. Rhode Island is being so provincial, the people from Woonsocket would never take a class down in Westerly. Mm-hmm. So twice a year I'm in the southern end of the state. twice a year I'm up in Woonsocket. Three times a year, the middle of the state. So I go around, I make the rounds.
Mm-hmm. And how can people get in touch with website and phone numbers?
My website is foodsafety-certification.com. Mm-hmm. And the office phone number, 401-385-9040.
And you're out of the Providence area. I mean, it's considered Hope, Rhode Island, is basically off North Main Street, the North Burial Ground in that area off of...
No. Hope is down in the Coventry, Scituate
area.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So for some reason, why did I think it was because there actually is a section of Providence
Hope Street.
Hope Street in that area. So you're in the Coventry area.
Yes.
Okay. So you're in the middle of the state. So you can head down to the southern portion of Rhode Island, almost into Connecticut area, stuff like that. And the other thing that that you did tell me as well is not only restaurants and stuff, but you also would go into Twin River. You've been into the casinos because a lot of people might think, you know, all right, they can, you know, you can do this and you can do that. But you also have to do one of your biggest things that you actually work with is something in your own background. You work with some of these people that are working in the Department of Health. These people, you know, go to all these establishments on a daily basis. When you're working with some of these people, what are you doing with them?
Well, a lot of times people will call and say they want me to come in because they've had an inspection with the health department and they weren't in compliance. Mm-hmm. So we'll work to get them back in compliance with the food code. Some people will call me when they're opening their business for the first time, so it's an opening inspection. And then some of them I do on a routine basis. Some I inspect quarterly, some twice a year. And it's just to make sure that they're in compliance, basically. A lot of my students, they're always the ones to call me if they have questions anytime during the 3 years that between classes, because every 3 years they have to recertify in Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. They'll call if they have questions, or they'll say, gee, can you stop by? I want to remodel, or I have something to do. And the fact that I used to wear that hat makes a big difference. Yeah.
I noticed there was a TV show a few years ago on the Food Network, which is, I don't think it's there anymore. There was a gentleman who I believe he's got his own talk show now, Robert Irvin, or Irvine, whatever his last name is. He was going out to different restaurants and remodeling some of the places, and he was also making sure that the health codes were followed in a lot of these restaurants. One restaurant that he went into was the old Minelli's restaurant on Chuck Stone Avenue. He had gone in there and had them remodel the whole restaurant, and they had tons of food on their menus, their appetizers. They had like 20 something appetizers. When they decided to reopen the restaurant after the renovation, there was only about 5 to 6 appetizers on the restaurant menu, and a shorter menu, which made it a lot easier for the people. But some of the people that were mainstays at that restaurant, like, okay, how come you don't have this anymore? How come you don't have this? So that's and then later, not too long after they remodeled it, unfortunately, it was ruined because some lady actually went into the restaurant parking lot and her car like jammed right into the side of the building after about 2 months being opened. And unfortunately, she was an elderly woman. She was fine. It just she had a medical condition. But unfortunately, the $3 million had to be redid again. They did the restaurant over again. So they called him back, and then unfortunately, 6 months later, they closed. I guess 6-7 months later, they closed. When you're going into certain restaurants, Linda, I know that you've got to follow guidelines, and you're very, very strict on guidelines. You also, as I said, you work with the health departments, but When you're walking into an establishment and it's not a restaurant, if it's a it could be a casino, or it could be a school, it could be whatever it could be, what are you looking for?
Well, there's a food code that we follow, mm-hmm. and there's certain policies and procedures that are set down in stone by the state. The FDA writes the food code, then the state adopts. They create their own set of rules, you can say, mm-hmm. for the establishment, whether it be a school or a restaurant, whatever. There's certain things that have to be done. And the first thing we take a look at, seriously, and this is going to sound a little funky, is we go to the hand sink and turn the water on. Mm. Is the water warm enough?
Yeah.
Then we look to see, are they washing their hands? Is the right equipment there to do it? So we start with the real basics that we could start with, whether we're at home or in a restaurant or in a school. Cleanliness. So we're looking at how clean are they keeping? Are they cleaning the correct way? Are they using the right chemicals? Are they using the right sanitizer? Are they testing it? We're looking at all those things that could create a foodborne illness by neglect. So education, and so I'll go back to the education portion. These people will never know how to do that unless the leaders of the school, restaurant, facility are educated enough to pass that knowledge down. But it gets as simple as, well, how do you wash your hands? Mm-hmm. And do you come to work clean? Do you have your hat or your hand net on? Is your uniform clean? Do you take your apron off before you go to the bathroom? Mm-hmm. Do you wash your hands when you go to the bathroom? Right. Is the sign there? So we're looking at getting that down and dirty, looking at those simple things. Then we get bigger and we look at air breaks and air gaps and flooring and ceiling. But it starts with the real simple things like mm-hmm. washing your hands and cleanliness. So every place we go into, we do the same thing.
Right.
We start with the simple and we move right up the list at refrigeration, freezing, cooling, heating, all those kinds of things.
That was my next thing, and you actually just mentioned it. Jotting it down. Gloves and hairnets. When you're going into an establishment, and it is important, Dottie, as you said. You know, when some of these people who may not have hairnets on. Now, I was at a restaurant down in Texas last week, where all of the people behind the counter, even in front of the counter, had their hairnets on. Very important, and boy, it was clean. It was a local establishment down there. My wife and I went down there to visit our grandkids, and boy, I tell you, at some places, you could eat off the floor, which you don't want to, but you could say, but some of them you would. Won't even want to walk into the restaurant because, you know, I mean, it is also, it's a health code. You want to go into an establishment where you feel comfortable and you don't want to feel like, ugh, you know, you want to make sure that the employees, you know, are presenting themselves the right way. And you must see some of those people who don't follow those codes.
I actually last summer was on my way to work, and I saw a food service worker get out of her car to mail a letter, mm-hmm. and she already had her apron on. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to myself, how many things did that apron touch before she even gets to work?
Yeah.
How much bacteria is on there? What is she going to cross-contaminate now, and she hasn't even got to work?
Yeah, and it's amazing. But then, as I said, you know, there are most of the state you see. Is there a percentage on good and bad out there?
I wouldn't say a percentage. Most people try to do it the right way.
Yeah, I was going to say.
At least my students. Linda, yeah. The people Linda and I teach, mm-hmm. they take it to heart. They're serious about it.
Now, here's the other thing. As you're kind of with Dottie doing this thing, Linda, are there people out there that have taken your classes who are in the food establishment or department out there? They're working with restaurants and stuff. You know, are there former students now are in the business now?
Many are repeat visitors back to our classes. Mm-hmm. It's a requirement. There has to be a food safety manager, mm-hmm. certified food safety manager, on duty while they're working. Mm-hmm. Has to be at least one. There's way more than one because they know that it's necessary to get that the word out to their people, so they send them to the classes. Mm-hmm. But there has to be that's for the food code. They have got to have a person who is certified and knows how to set up the rules, the policies and procedures in every place. And they do try. They really do try to do the right thing. In getting busy, they have to be reminded every now and then. That's why the health department's out there. That's why we're out there. Mm-hmm. We're a support to them. We don't go in there, you know, and crack the whip. We go in there more as a support system, and we're going to help them get through if they've had a bad review and they're going to be shut down and, you know, their livelihood is going to come to an end. We go in and we try to educate them. We try to help them through and kind of understand why we tell them what they have to do. Why do you have to, why is it wrong to wear that apron to the post office? Mm-hmm. And so we try to explain that to them so that they understand it in simple terms. I mean, some of the terms that we use, the terminology can be a little bit like, oh my God, what is that all about? So we try to do it real simple so that, and get them where they understand it. Why are they doing what they have to do? Mm. So that's really the goal when we're out there.
Are people learning? They're understanding though. I mean, if they're you know, well, I'll have you mention that. Yeah.
I found that when I was a state inspector, it took me a little longer to do an inspection because I was teaching at the same time. Right. I wasn't just writing violations. I wasn't just saying fix this, fix that. I would tell them the reason why, and I firmly believe that when somebody is told why they have to do something, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And most of the time, they are they're actually performing well after that. I mean, if you find a violation here and there, and if they don't fix it up, what is the next step that they need to do, and what do you have to do after that?
Well, it depends. If I find the violation first, mm-hmm. usually they'll fix it.
Yeah.
But if the state finds it first, then they might call me in and say, "I got to fix this. How can I do it?"
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
When you explain why, how somebody can get sick if they don't fix it, then they're more apt to do it.
Now, is there a penalty if they don't fix it right away? Or how many days that they can do this?
Depending on what the violation is, if it's a critical violation, yeah. It has to be fixed either right away or within 24 hours,
right.
Or the state, or even in Massachusetts, they have municipal health inspectors. So they'll give them maybe just hours to get it fixed,
yeah.
Or they might close them down and say, we'll reopen you when all of these violations have been fixed. So depending on what it is.
Yeah. There's a local establishment in North Attleboro that's in the newspaper this morning. They're not having any violations or anything like that, but they're infringing on Dunkin' Donuts. It's a local coffee shop that just opened up. And they basically are saying on the windows that we are, whatever we are, it's one of Dunkin' Donuts' sayings that they've used for many, many years, and they have to change that or they're going to risk closing. Now, they just opened up like 3 weeks ago. Well, now they've changed all that. Everything has changed. Now they have a new signage on their windows as well. They were there like 30 years ago, and then they reopened like 3-4 months ago, and now they've changed all their look right now. But when you go into, now you said you also go into hospitals. And I know some hospitals out there, including Rhode Island Hospital, Sturdy Hospital here in Attleboro, you go in there and you can't believe sometimes the food. I mean, and I know some of the cooks here and some of the chefs here are graduates of Johnson & Wales. And you go into these establishments, and as you've seen, Dottie, a lot of changes in the last 10, 15, 20 years on how people prepare foods at hospitals. And the way they look now, it's not like years ago it was, you know, watered down soup and stuff like that. Now you've got professional made meals out there.
Well, usually when somebody's in the hospital, it's not there for a vacation.
Right, exactly.
So, yes, the meals are better.
Yeah.
I have no complaints. I've been in the hospital a couple of times, mm-hmm. and I have no complaints about the food. Obviously, some of them were my students, and they knew I was in the hospital, mm-hmm. so whether I got preferential treatment or not, I don't know. But you have to cater to whatever the person's in there for, so it might be a dietary
yeah.
restriction. But as a rule, I don't have any complaints about, I know it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, even if it's not palatable, I know it's going to be safe to
right.
eat.
Yeah, exactly. As you said, just go through it again, Dottie, on what other establishments that you actually do go into besides the places we've already said.
Besides restaurants,
yeah.
schools, hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
I teach in all of them. Usually I inspect their kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I was up at Twin River last week teaching, and it was the employees from the banquet area,
mm-hmm.
Fred and Steve's Wicked,
yeah.
that were in this class. It was a good sized class, and I'm up there every year. If mm-hmm. I'm not there, I'm down at the Newport Grand because it's all the same company.
Right, exactly. When you're into some of the places like that, talk a little bit more about this, Linda, about the assisted living places. They've got another strict rule too, like all the other places. They're serving people out there on a daily basis, sometimes 3-4 times a day, depending on what they're doing. And once in a while, some of these establishments also have social hours, you know, wine and cheese events and stuff like that. But when you go into assisted living, nursing homes and stuff like that, they're also following they have to follow these guidelines 150% as well.
Oh, they all do.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be the assisted living, the nursing home, a school, a restaurant, the rules are the same.
Mm-hmm.
The rules are the same. The menu may change. The food that they're creating may be different, but the rules themselves don't change from one facility to another.
Mm-hmm.
So literally a worker in the nursing or assisted living could actually go to a restaurant and the rules would never change.
Right.
The way you cook, to what temperature, the way you hold the food, the way you cool it, the cleanliness, the sanitation is still the same from one place to another. That's something that easily translates from one went from a restaurant to a nursing home to an assisted living. Again, the menu will change mm-hmm. according to the person, the people that they're feeding. Compromised immune systems would be in a, what we would consider in a hospital or a nursing home, as opposed to a, just a general public who can just about eat anything.
Right.
So the menu's different, but the rules stay the same no matter where you go.
Speaking of the general public, do you also give classes to the general public if people wanted it? Instead of being in a food establishment organization, can anyone go in there off, you know, and give you, you give you guys a call and, you know, say if myself or someone else wants to get, not certified, but they want to learn more about this. Do you do that as well, Dottie?
All my classes are open to the public.
Anybody.
So I don't care where you work. Some people do it just for the knowledge,
mm-hmm.
Especially if they do a lot of parties at their home, or some people do cater to other parties, to their mm-hmm. friends. They'll come in and they'll take the class. And the people, it's really interesting when you have a class of, say, 30 or 40 people mm-hmm. and those who are working in the restaurants or in the food industry, and then you'll get someone who's coming from, say, a VFW hall, the Knights of Columbus, or a senior center, and they're learning about food for the first time, and it's like, how come I never made anybody sick? How is it that yeah. I'm still alive and I've been doing it wrong all my life?
Yeah.
And I think the problem is that as healthy people like us, if we wake up in the morning and we have an upset stomach or, you know, a little diarrhea or something, and we just kind of, you know, blow it off and yeah. say, oh, it must have been something I ate.
Right.
But we're healthy people and we can do that, where it's the people, the elderly, the children, people with the compromised immune systems, they can't handle a foodborne illness as mm-hmm. well as we can.
Right.
So I think that's what surprises people when they take the class for the first time and they learn there's so much out there about food safety they weren't aware of.
Mm. And you said, you put the nail on the head right there. Safety and knowledge are the two things that you need to learn about, that is for sure. All right, we have Linda Hoxie and Dottie LeBeau in studio. We have the latest conditions once again on the traffic as Gina is wrapping things up once again for us. Gina.
Yeah, so we're still a little heavy in Attleboro on 95 North by 295. 295 North on the tail end, getting onto 95, also still congested. Now, if you get through that pocket of heaviness in Attleboro on 95 North, you're back on the brakes around Neponset Street. 495 North, still heavy out of Milford in pockets. The expressway inbound to Boston, full and overflowing. In fact, both directions through Quincy and Braintree, struggling on 93. So probably want to try to use public transportation. Expect a few buses and trains to be running behind. But you can check out MBTA.com, or you can follow MBTA at MBTA Alerts on Twitter. Get yourself a free account. County of Thatcher is a little busy around Attleboro, South Main, and Pleasant. A bit of volume, but we're not bad. 95 South coming out of Pawtucket, backed up to almost School Street. 295 South is fine down to Route 6. 610 connector is no longer overflowing. So now we've been talking about here this morning, maybe you are just getting in the car, maybe you're just turning the radio on. Important to note that expected delays on 138 eastbound and westbound, but mostly eastbound in the morning, have exceeded our expectations. Rhode Island Turnpike and Bridge Authority setting up one lane moving in each direction of 138. It's usually fine in the midday, but mornings and afternoons have been really rough. And right now, 138 East is very slow coming out of Jamestown, heading for the toll plaza, and then again on the upslope of the bridge down into Newport. Leaving, it's a little congested at the upslope of the bridge on 138 West. Now, that's going to change. We're going to have the opposite this afternoon. So for the coming weeks until this project is over, and keep in mind there's also weight restrictions on trucks, you probably want to try to use during peak times 24 to get down toward Portsmouth, Middletown, and Newport. Now, normally I would say that 114 may be the way to go, but lots of heavy traffic through Warren on 114 and extremely slow traffic during peak times over the Mount Hope Bridge will probably discourage you from doing that more than once. If you're headed out to the Cape, it's a little busy on the Bourne Bridge, and we have some heavy, heavy traffic here coming out of South Dennis on the Mid-Cape Highway, heading over toward 124. You've got more than a mile of backup. Route 28 is busy in Mashpee. It's also busy in Hyannis. Some pockets of slow traffic there as well. Next report coming up tomorrow morning. Gina Brown with your AM 1320 traffic.
All right, Gina, sounds good. Thanks once again. All right, we are going to take another break here. We have Linda Hoxie and Dottie LeBeau. They are food safety consultants. Their website is foodsafety-certification.com. We're going to be talking with them a little bit more. Very, very interesting subject. A lot of people may not even realize what's going on out there. So we're going to continue with that, and we've got Jim Corbin standing by with the latest update on our weather forecast next.
On June 19th at 6:30 p.m., the Attleboro Public Library will host People to People in Cuba. The event will feature two recent travelers to Cuba sharing photos and conversations with Cubans about their country and transition. The audience will hear about music, history, the revolution, art, salsa, cars, everyday living, and more. For more information and to register for the event, visit the library's website, attleborolibrary.org, and look for the event calendar.
Each year, nearly 250,000 people head to the emergency room due to slips in their bathrooms alone. When you add injuries caused on kitchen floors, pool decks, hardwood stairs, and walkways, it's over 1,000,000 people. Your whole house is an obstacle course. That's why Sentinel Safe Floor Solutions provides services to make your existing floors slip-resistant and safe. Whether it's your family or your pet that has been slipping in your home, Sentinel Safe Floors can reduce the chances of being injured. Locally owned and operated and serving the greater Attleboro area, learn more about Sentinel Safe Floors by calling 508-535-5000.
Popular historian and speaker Dr. Gary Highlander is returning to Richards Memorial Library in North Attleboro. Dr. Highlander, an adjunct professor of history and education at Framingham State University, will present Eisenhower's America, a three-part talk about the presidency of Dwight D. Eisenhower. The talk will take place at 7 o'clock p.m. on three consecutive Thursdays, May 25th, June 1st, and June 8th. Participants must pre-register for this event by emailing mholmes@salesinc.org.
Finding a mechanic or automotive repair facility can be an arduous task. Questions like, am I being overcharged or am I paying for work that doesn't need to be done, are valid concerns. Roberts Automotive understands this. That's why they abide by a code of ethics to help keep your mind at ease. When bringing your vehicle to Roberts Automotive, they'll explain how to correct existing problems and perform preventative maintenance. Most importantly, Roberts Automotive knows your vehicle is more than transportation, it's a lifeline. To work, to school, for family. Roberts Automotive is located at 193 Pine Street in Attleboro. For more information and to view their code of ethics, you can visit their website at robertsautomotiveinc.net.
All right, Jim Corbin standing by once again as we kind of wrap things up on the forecast for this half hour, Jim.
Well, Don, we've got a couple of rain showers crossing Cape Cod right now, just past Nantucket and Chatham. Might have a quick isolated shower in a few spots this morning, but it's late this afternoon and this evening that I'm concerned about, and I'll be monitoring it all day. Severe weather in New York and Pennsylvania are going to be approaching the greater Attleboro-Providence area late this afternoon and this evening, and that'll be the situation. So if it looks a little suspicious looking to the west, dark bottom clouds late this afternoon, watch out. Upper 60s. Other than that, we'll have clouds breaking for a little bit of sunshine. Again, a shower or thunderstorm this evening, falling back through the 50s, and then I think the warmest afternoon of the rest of the week is tomorrow. Mid-70s, sunshine, puffy clouds, a little breezy. Sun and clouds, here we go again. It's a combination of sun and clouds this time of the year. High temperatures on Friday, about 70, a late afternoon or evening shower or thunderstorm. Most of Saturday and Sunday look dry. However, by Sunday night, especially in Monday, we have another cool rain event. In fact, Monday next week may be similar to Memorial Day 2 days ago, where the temperatures did not get out of the 50s with mostly cloudy skies and some damp weather. So if you're someone who does not like hot weather, you will like the next week in 10 days.
All right. Sounds good, Jim.
Can I have a quick question?
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
And again, I've enjoyed, as always, the conversation with your guests and this morning. What, as someone who deals with temperature, what is the magical thing about 165 degrees that makes meat good at that point? What is it? In other words, it's not boiling point, it's not 212. Are all meats the same at 165, or are certain other meats higher or lower, or what are their thoughts on that?
The highest cooking temperature is 165, and that's for any kind of poultry. So chicken, duck, turkey, you would always have to cook it to a minimum of 165 for 15 seconds to kill the salmonella.
And what about, like, steak?
Steak, if it's a steak, 145 degrees.
Oh, really? Steak is lower then. Okay. Is there a reason for that, do you think, or?
Yeah, because you only need 145 degrees to kill the E. coli in the steak. You need 165 degrees to kill the salmonella in the poultry.
Do most locations, like restaurants, and you go to hospitals and places, do most of those places use meat thermometers, or are they just kind of guessing?
Oh, no, they all have thermometers in their pockets.
And should all of us do it as well, have meat thermometers?
Well, I think everybody should have one at home, sure.
Yeah. And one last question, and I know who's listening is going to laugh about this. What is it? Is there a negative about cooking with microwaves?
Well, if you cook everything to 165 degrees in the microwave, it'll be safe to eat.
It doesn't matter then that the fact that it's a microwave where apparently it's cooked from the inside out or outside in.
No, cooking it doesn't matter.
Cooking with a microwave is just as safe as cooking on a grill or in a oven.
Well, everything in a microwave has to be cooked to 165 degrees.
But it can be cooked. I mean, not that I do it. I'll heat something up that's already been cooked. But if you cook straight up from something that's from the original, meat or anything, it's heated up, a microwave cooking is not damaging to your health if you eat that food.
No, not at all.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Jim, thanks so much.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you in the morning. All right, Jim. Thanks once again. Yeah, basically he's talking about our the gentleman who's going to be coming in after me at 9 o'clock, Paul Healy, who despises microwaves. And I know he's going to probably hop in here in a minute or so to talk about it because we're talking about him. But what I heard when Jim was talking to Dottie about that, that the answers were right there. I mean, like, boy, do you know your subjects. You both, ladies, both know your subjects well in a hand. I mean, it came up right away. You didn't have to, like, all right, well, wait a minute. Like, let's think about it. It was right there on the top of your head. You know exactly what you're talking about. That's why that you're good at this, that, at this company. As you said, I think a lot of people will realize that, as Jim said, you're going into an establishment. You don't know how much the food is going to be cooked. Yes, you said, Dottie, these people have to have these thermometers. I certainly use a thermometer at home on everything that I cook, whether it be a roast, a turkey, a chicken, whatever it is, you know, and I'm following the guidelines. Sometimes if I'm putting a roast in the oven, it may go up 10, 20 degrees more, you know, if it says something, whatever it is, but it's always juicy. So I've been using a thermometer for God knows how long.
When was the last time you calibrated your thermometer?
About 6 months ago. What's the most important thing? What is a good method on that?
We calibrate our thermometers every morning before we leave the house.
So how do you do that?
We use ice water.
Okay.
If you put a glass with ice cubes and water, and if that needle doesn't go down to 32 degrees, then you can calibrate it. Mm-hmm. Or if you got a digital, if it doesn't read 32, throw it away and get a new one.
Okay. When you said that, that's exactly what how I did it before, because as our guests that we usually come in here on a monthly basis from our chefs, they do this all the time on a daily basis, sometimes twice a day because they're cooking it all the times. One of the chefs, the company's called My Chef Lara. They're up off Blackstone Boulevard. When they cooking and doing for companies and parties, whatever they're doing, they use it at 3 or 4 times a day. They're redoing, putting it on ice, make sure it goes down. They were the ones who actually told me, like, this is what you got to do. In fact, you may know the company up on Hope Street on the east side called Stock Culinary Goods. They use a lot of their those items from that establishment, because these people, you know, they've been doing it for years, like you've been working with these people a long time as well. When you're going into an inspection, as you said, you're looking at the food, but you also, Linda, I'm going to hand this to you for a second. You also said this, that you're also looking at other types of inspections as well. You're working with how do you put it gently? People who Droppings. You know, you're basically working with these people. You also have to look at that as well.
When you say droppings, you mean mouse droppings?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We take our little flashlight and we go underneath along the edges of the walls under shelving where it's dark, and we make sure we look everywhere. We look for those little telltale signs that we have a critter visiting us.
Yeah.
We look for a propped open door. No door should ever be open. Mm-hmm. We look to see if there's an air gap at the bottom of the doors to make sure nothing can come underneath. Windows that are opened, fans in the kitchen, are they circulating dust? Mm-hmm. There's so many things we look at. When we go in, we're a fresh pair of eyes, which is good because sometimes you walk by things every single day and you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come in with a fresh pair of eyes, we'll notice it. We may notice it right away. So we start right at the door as we enter, and we start looking, and we have a routine.
Mm-hmm.
We might start with the hand sink, but then we eventually get to the floors, walls, ceilings, gaskets on refrigerators, and to the people themselves.
Yeah, and as I said, you're working with that on all establishments. It's not just one or two, Dottie, that you have to look at. You're doing this basically in every establishment that you do visit.
Oh, it's the same set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
The FDA food code, doesn't matter who owns the business, what type of clientele, you look at the kitchen all the same way.
What are some of the, as you mentioned again a little bit, if you want to repeat this again, what are some of the most common violations that you've seen first of all, how long have you done this now?
Over 15 years.
And you must have seen a lot of those violations, but what are some of the more common violations that people are, you're seeing on a day-to-day basis?
Hand washing.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know how to count to 20.
Mm.
They go to a hand sink and turn the water on, and it's like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's not just, people don't understand. Yes, you need to have hot water at 100 degrees. Yes, you have to have soap. You have to have the friction. But it's the 20 seconds, and how many germs can I get down the drain?
Mm-hmm.
And you can have the hot water and the soap and be rubbing your hands together, but if you only do it for 5-10 seconds.
Does it make a difference if you have, now, a lot in restaurants, even some homes I've seen it, if you've got paper towels or the hand blower?
Well, the food code says you can have either or.
You can?
Yes.
Okay. What do you prefer that people have, especially like restaurants? Would you like to
see?
My personal preference,
most establishments have paper towels.
Yeah.
Very few have the hand dryers.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my personal opinion, I would much rather have a paper towel than the hand. I sometimes overthink things. I'm looking at, okay, suppose I didn't get all the germs off my hands. Now I put it under the hottie, and now are they just growing more bacteria
exactly.
there? But that's my personal preference. Mm-hmm. But most kitchens, 99% of them have the paper towels.
Yeah, As I said, I had gone to, when I was away the last couple of days, there was, into the men's room, they had the paper towels, and they had the hand blowers as well. But some of them, now the newer ones out there, you've got the blower that comes right out at you. As soon as you put your hands on it, it can blow you away sometimes. The other ones that I've seen that I've used the last couple of days was the one that you lay your hands down.
Oh, Dyson.
Those are kind of new, and they blow right on you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And those, I mean, they work, but as I said, I think I'm more of a paper towel myself person as well. But being at home, Linda, you're an Italian background. Mm-hmm. You've got the old mappina.
Oh, we did have that.
Yeah.
It was always there.
Yeah, exactly.
Always there. Not very good. And I have shied away from using that ever since I started getting into the food safety. That was one of the first things that we just did away with.
Mm-hmm.
Sponges and the mappina, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Paper towels are the way to go. And you'll
find
paper towels in my bathroom. You'll find them by the kitchen sink. You'll find them just about everywhere in my house. The germs that can grow and live in those mappinas
mm-hmm.
Is incredible.
Yeah.
Well, we did a lot of things that we shouldn't have done, and we shouldn't even be here today.
Right.
And we were talking
but
off the air about the turkey on the counter for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours
yes.
as we ate all day long.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you'll learn, not a very good thing to do at all.
Yeah.
We have this time frames for things to be left out, and that's one of the things we look at when we go around and inspect.
Yeah, you know, and as I said, you know, you learn a lot in life. You know, as we were kids growing up, being in an Italian household, we were, you know, as you said, we had this out all day long and stuff like that, whatever it may have been. We're still here, you know, we're still here doing well. But some of the things are out there. One thing that I was just thinking of a second ago, this would be actually a nice idea. Do they actually teach this in culinary school?
Oh, Johnson and Wales.
Johnson and Wales. I was going to say they must be doing this. They must at these different classes.
There's a program in Rhode Island as well with the food bank, mm-hmm. where they have a 13-week course, and these are for people that are displaced or just have no direction, right. Deciding to get. And they do this 13, and they graduate at the end after 13 weeks, and they graduate with a ServSafe certificate. Mm-hmm. That's part of the process. In Johnson and Wales, they graduate, that's part of their mm-hmm. Their curriculum. They have right. to have that's part of it. So I think there are programs out there where they're doing it, but Dottie and I are open to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're all the time. I mean, we'll schedule a class around whatever they need.
Oh, I teach nights, weekends. It doesn't matter if I'm doing a private class with somebody. Mm-hmm. I work with their hours and their staff.
Now, if someone wanted to when people do get in touch with you, is there a small fee, you know, for people out there who just want to take this course?
Yes, if they want to take the full certification class in Rhode Island, it's a 15-hour class, and that includes a textbook in the national exam, and that's $185.
Okay.
For the people being recertified in Rhode Island, there's no exam right now. It's a six-hour refresher class, and that's $75. But in Massachusetts, every 5 years, by law, they have to be retested. But there's no classroom requirement.
Right.
So they'll come in. What I usually do for the people in Massachusetts, I'll send them a textbook a couple weeks ahead of time so they can have it read. Then they come to class, we'll do a four-hour review, and then they take their national exam.
So it's basically, I mean, I think personally, I think this is something that not just establishments, restaurants, hospitals, schools, I think everybody should learn a little bit on this too, because they can, you know, and also it'll help them at home, you know. I think it's important to keep your own kitchen clean, you know, make sure that, you know, you don't leave utensils out, make sure that your food is cooked the way it's supposed to be. First of all, I want to thank both of you once again. I've learned a lot. I hope my listeners have learned a lot as well. Once again, I want to thank both you ladies for coming in. Dottie, how can, once again, people get in touch with you and your company?
My phone number is 401-385-9040, or they can go out to my website and they can see if they're interested in a class or if they just want to call and schedule a routine inspection.
Okay.
And my students, they all know between the 3 years between when they're being certified and recertified, whenever they have a question, they just get on the phone and give me a call. I'm more than happy to talk to them.
And lastly, I know both of you ladies are part of the United Regional Chamber of Commerce. That's how I got in touch with you guys through Jack Lank.